Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. Are your ears weary about hearing how the world is going to you know where in nothing flat? Are you weary of just what seems to be oppressive information that this world of ours is in one mucky mess? If you are, then just be prepared for the next half hour. You are not going to have that attitude by the time we finish. You're going to find that there's a lot going on in this world, and there's a lady who has decided she's going to bring the information to the forefront with her wonderful book, The New We Are the New Radicals, Julia Molden. Julia, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Now, you coined the phrase New Radicals, and you're really passionate about working with different people to understand what this is all about. You yourself are an award-winning journalist and founder of the Bee's Knees Communication.
Right.
And you had a best-selling book previous to this one called Green as Gold, and it was the first environmental management guide for business, and it's gone around the world. You have written speeches for cabinet ministers, CEOs, various celebrities. You've been involved with some of the most prestigious organizations throughout the world. You have lived in Europe, the U.S., Mexico. You have been a woman that has been exposed to so many variables in life. Before we went on the air, you said to me, Donna, this was something I was working on over 4 years ago. Tell us, what made you decide you wanted to bring attention to people who are not necessarily being written up in People magazine and in the New York Times,
mm-hmm.
and telling about what they're doing that's creating a difference in this world in a positive way?
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I mean, it was really important to me because there are all kinds of examples of people running around the world these days, you know, the celebrities and the billionaires, doing good and making a difference. And it's really wonderful to see these people doing this work. But I wanted to write about ordinary people like you and me who also are finding ways to make a difference, but in a very specific way. You know, we all know about volunteering and philanthropy, but these are people who've found a way that how they earn their living can become the way they give back. So that's how it started in my own life, and as I began to think about you know, what I might do for the rest of my life as I reach my late 40s, I began to reflect on the person that I'd been, you know, this kind of idealistic young woman growing up under the influence of the 60s, and wondering if I could combine that person with the mature professional that I'd become. And the more I started thinking about it and talking about what was going on inside of me, the more I realized there were a whole lot of other people thinking the same thoughts.
In the very beginning of your book, this just blew me away. The latest source of global warming worry, funeral pyres in India. Now, in a million years, that would never have crossed my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I'm aware of them, but it would never have crossed my mind. Your statistics on this were phenomenal.
Yeah.
Each year, 8.5 million Hindus are cremated. An adult body requires as much as 500 kilograms, about 1,100 pounds, of wood and as long as 6 hours to burn. Estimates peg the annual contribution to global warming of this ancient tradition at 7 million tons of carbon dioxide. And that came out in The Economist in June 2007.
Right.
What pulled this into your space? Because that is, I can't recall ever seeing that kind of a statistic given about that kind of a tradition.
Well, and thank you for calling that one to your audience's attention, because I think what I tried to do with the little epigraphs at the beginning of each chapter is create a snapshot of what was going on in the world in June 2007, which was when I was starting to wrap up the manuscript. You know, that's how long the process takes for a book before it actually comes out. And I wanted to include really different examples because I think what we tend to do is to think, okay, I'm going to do good, I'm going to go to Africa, or I'm going to, you know, become more environmentally friendly, and I think about my, you know, driving my car less or turning my lights out. But the point that I was trying to make is that there is a whole world of difficulties, as you said in your opening. You know, there's a lot going on in this world, and there are many, many different ways to help. And people of all ages, in each profession, every sector, and around the world are becoming new radicals now.
And you bring a point up that I really, really liked. And again, it's in your very first chapter. You talk about a man by the name of Dennis McGuire.
Right.
And I'll read it exactly as you put it. Dennis is part of an emerging movement of people who are reinventing their work to help save the world. And that's a pretty big sentence, a pretty big visual if you think about it.
Right.
And yet he's not out there necessarily broadcasting that
right.
This is what he's going to do.
Right.
Tell us about Dennis.
Well, it's very interesting because I think Dennis is a great example, and there are several others who are in the book who I say, you know, they have no grand plan for reinventing themselves. It's not like they set out to change the world, but somehow this idea has risen up in people's consciousness, and all kinds of people are seized by this idea that they can make a difference through their work. And what Dennis has done is developed a system. It's water in a box. It's a way of filtering and purifying water that will be of real use to refugee camps or indeed, you know, if there's a hurricane or an earthquake in a part of the U.S., you know, these mobile units can come in and provide people with fresh water. So, yeah, he didn't set out to become a new radical, but by making a difference through what he does for a living, through his company, he is a new radical.
And this is important for people to understand. It is not a bad time to look at new ideas. It is a great time to look at innovation. It is a great time to move forward. Now is the time for us to look at this because, if nothing else, it's just the population of the planet that has become phenomenal. And it's going to become even more so. I was listening to people talking about supplying of food, and here we are at this time in history where with technology and everything else, we've really, in many ways, got enough food that's being produced on this planet to feed everyone.
Right.
But it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, we're in the midst of a food crisis now for, you know, a variety of factors. But you raised the point of innovation, and if I can pick up on that, there are,
sure.
are three kinds of new radicals. Activists, so they're people who say, you know, I quit my job and went to work for Doctors Without Borders, say, you know, so they work for a not-for-profit.
Mm-hmm.
There are entrepreneurs, people like Dennis McGuire, who, you know, start an organization or run an organization that's all about doing good, that's its core mission. And then there are innovators, and I think these are going to be the ones that we really are going to find fascinating to watch. They're people who stay inside their field or organization, because not everybody wants to quit their job, and drive change from within. And if you just, you know, picture it in your mind's eye, not everybody can run off and work for UNICEF, right? The trains need to keep running, the banks need to stay open, and, you know, there are a lot of people that need to keep running the world. So how can all of these people do good, too? So I found some really great examples of people who are doing precisely that.
Absolutely. Now, let's talk about getting started in doing this. We have so many people that are listening to this show that are hard workers. They have been very industrious throughout their lives. They are reaching what might be described as the beginning of the middle age in life. People are living so much longer. They're in their 50s, maybe late 40s, early 50s, maybe even in their 60s. And they look at what they've done and they say, gee whiz, where do I go from here? How do I get started? how do I make a shift? And that's something that previous generations, I don't think really, because lifestyle was a lot shorter, ever really considered. They felt they were lucky if they lived to be 65.
Right.
And now we're looking at a generation that could easily be healthy and productive up until 100 plus.
Yeah.
So where do people start? How are they going to start?
Right, and absolutely. I mean, we know that this generation is likely to live, the boomer generation, which really is one of the driving forces of this new radicals movement, is likely to live longer than any previous generation. So that gives us, and that was part of my motivation, that gives us 30 more years to be active and engaged. You know, that's a long time to hang around on the golf course. I don't think, according to the research, that very many of us are going to do that. So it was really important for me in writing this book to include more than inspirational examples. I think those are great, but as you say, people really want to understand how they can become new radicals. It's the question I always get asked, how do I become a new radical? So what I say is I don't have a map for anybody, but I do outline a kind of process in the book based on the new radical pioneers that I've worked with and talked to. So it's they ask themselves a series of 9 questions. And the 3 key questions are what I think of as the R&D process, so research and development. It's thinking about what you have to offer, so what your skills and capabilities are, and detaching those from the role that you've done and thinking of them as a sort of portfolio that's portable. The other piece is thinking about what moves me. So here I am at midlife, you know, what's most important to me now, whether it's, you know, what, you know, how do I get joy out of life, what's my legacy, determining whatever it is that really turns you on now and how you want to spend the rest of your life. And then the third major question is about, excuse me, I'm losing my voice, what the world needs. So looking around you at what's going on, whether it's down the street or on the other side of the planet, and trying to find an issue that you're really deeply passionate about, that really calls to your heart and mind so that you can stay committed to this cause for the longer term.
Let's talk about Jamie Kennedy, because I think he fits in this genre that you're talking about. This is a very successful man. He's in his early 50s. He is one of Canada's most celebrated chefs. Tell us what he did so that he made his shift, and he didn't move out of the neighborhood. He's still doing what people have known him to do, but how did he make the shift?
Yeah, he's a great example, and I'm glad you brought him up. I think of him as the Alice Waters of Canada, and people will know about Alice, of course. He was a celebrated chef and could have continued doing the same work for the rest of his life, but he realized that there was something, as he puts it, deeply crazy about sourcing ingredients from Thousand Acre Farms thousands of miles away. So what he wanted to do was bring regional seasonal cuisine to his restaurant and to develop a kind of supply chain of farmers and cheesemakers and wineries, people that could give him what he needed to be able to make that kind of offering in his restaurant. And in fact, he's now got a second restaurant because the first one was so successful, and is opening a third later this year on his farm outside of Toronto, and everything will be sourced within a 5-kilometer radius. So when he set out on this path, that wouldn't have been possible, but because he's created the market for this regional seasonal cuisine, now there are all these people supplying it. So it's you know, not only has it changed the way he operates and what he can offer his customers, but it's created this whole other network as well.
You bring a point out about experts, and you say there's a limitation with many of these people. It's almost like they're in ivory towers. They are so specialized that they don't know how to come out of their arenas. And I liked what you said. Too often experts operate only within the silos of their disciplines and professional communities.
Right.
You want to be able to integrate with people that do more than that.
Yeah.
How can you know how to reach out to people like that? What do you ask?
Well, you know, it's I say that it's not rocket science. It's kind of old fashioned. You know, it's networking and research. You know, I recommend to people, my clients that I work with, and people that come up to me at conferences and so on. I just, you know, read, expand your horizons, read things that you would normally never read. Go to conferences that you know are outside of your field. Really just expose yourself to a lot of new influences. And in fact, it's something that I would really like to do. We're talking to an innovation center here in Toronto about doing the first New Radicals conference, because we'd like to be able to do that. There are people who are doing fantastic work in architecture, for instance, or in healthcare, or in the arts. You know, we'd like to bring them all together, all of these new radicals from different disciplines, so that there can be more of an exchange between these silos. And it's just getting started. People will probably be familiar with the TED conference, which takes place in somewhere in the Bay Area, I think, each year. So that kind of, you know, that's the first step in this process, and I think there's going to be more and more of it.
Well, I think it's marvelous, because too many systems have become entrenched in such a way and manner, I'll use another description, hardwired, to such a degree that it's creating paralysis, and we're not able to make shifts in an efficient, economical way, in a way that is going to take care of needs rapidly. We are relying on systems that are falling apart at the seams.
Yeah.
So whether it's certain companies, whether it's governmental bureaucracy or bureaucracy of any kind, it has a cycle. And when it starts falling apart at the seams, there has to be something else to step in. And I really like the fact that the individuals with initiative are able to move forward with it. You ask a question, which I think is so important, that when someone's looking and wanting to make a shift, what is it that touches the heart, the mind, the spirit? What moves one forward?
Mm-hmm.
What pushed your buttons?
Ooh, that's a good one. You know, I do talk about each new radical getting a kind of wake-up call. So it's very seldom that somebody reinvents themselves, you know, hurdles themselves off a comfortable path and tries something new without there being some kind of pain. You know, job loss, divorce, illness. And in my case, it was that kind of stirring, you know, that kind of wondering that I think is a part of midlife. And then I went through a very difficult divorce, and that, you know, intensified, let's say, got me away from dreaming and made me think, okay, now I've really got to move. And I had really enjoyed my work. I've been predominantly a speechwriter and got a lot of satisfaction out of it. But I'm a prototypical new radical in that I felt that, okay, what I've done is significant, but I really want to do something meaningful. And there wasn't one particular cause that was calling to me, but this idea of helping people reinvent themselves just seemed like a win-win proposition to me.
Well, here you are with this wonderful book that has so many thought-provoking opportunities of examination, exploration, and association with people who are doing. They have decided they are going to choose a new walk to walk. And regardless of their age, they're taking up that positioning of self-motivation, and they're making choices about who they're going to link up with. They're being very thoughtful about what they do.
Yeah.
They're not out here just blowing smoke to blow smoke, and they really don't care whether the world recognizes them or not, because they feel that what they're doing is going to make a difference just from the ripple effect. And I agree. You have a quote here from The Guardian Weekly, and it is about the fact that more than 450 slave workers, some as young as 14, have been rescued from Chinese brick factories. They work 16 to 20 hours a day. They have been fed just enough to stay alive, and they had been beaten by their captors. At least 13 people died before the government stepped in one of the biggest police investigations into forced labor camps in the country, which is China.
Mm-hmm.
These situations are going on in all parts of the world. We have slave trafficking that's going on in all parts of the world. I talked with someone who goes to some third world countries, and she sees it firsthand. She's seen it in Vietnam. She's seen it in Cambodia. And her stories, it's like you say, oh, come on, you must have been talking to some writer of some television show that's being produced out of Hollywood. This can't possibly be real, but it is.
Yeah.
So the question, what does the world need? People will hear about these things, and they'll say, gee, I'd love to do something, but I'm so far away. How do I determine how I can do something that's going to make a difference in the world?
Well, you know, I think that is such a universal feeling that, you know, there's so many problems. You know, the world is so corrupt. It's so big. I'm just one person. What can I possibly do? Pretty much everybody feels that way. And my response is that, you know, whatever you feel you can do, begin it now. You know, reach out in some way to an organization that is, you know, and you can find these organizations by Googling. It's very easy to find people who are helping on issues that you know, speak to you. And reach out and offer your services in some way. A lot of New Radicals, for instance, start out as volunteers as a way to gain experience in the sector that they want to work in, and then move into paid positions. And, you know, and I want to underline that there's, you know, I'm in no way opposed to volunteering or philanthropy. I just think that there is this third way that people can now give back. So, you know, just take that small step. Don't feel paralyzed. Don't give in to despair. Believe what the New Radicals believe, which is that each of us can make a difference.
Absolutely. That's something I totally support. Let's talk about Wendy, who is the founder of Teach for America, Wendy Kopp.
Yeah.
This is a woman that had a phenomenal idea, and I just thought, this is incredibly positive. I love what she's done. I've never heard of it, and because of your book, I did.
Yeah.
Tell us about Wendy.
Oh, she's such a great example, too. What a fantastic human being. She, when she graduated, well, it was actually when she was studying at Princeton, she realized that some of her peers, some of her fellow students, had not had the same education experiences as her. And although they were super bright, they were struggling in this new environment. And she was seized by the idea of starting an organization that would recruit the best and brightest kids coming out of university and have them work in rural and inner city schools for a two-year term. So I think of them as a kind of Peace Corps for teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And when she started the organization, everybody said, oh, Wendy, that's a great idea, but nobody's going to do it. Kids just want to go out and get rich and work on Wall Street. But she persevered, and Teach for America, which is the name of the organization, is now one of the largest recruiters in the U.S., on par with Microsoft, Procter & Gamble, and General Electric. So they've just succeeded beyond anybody's wildest dreams.
Absolutely amazing.
And it's,
go ahead.
Donna, can I just add one thought? Because it's often people think that it's, and Teach for America is such a great way to introduce this idea. People often think that New Radicals are people at midlife. But it's definitely not just boomers, because there are people in my book who are in their 60s through their 90s. But there's also the next New Radicals, so people who are in their 20s and 30s who are very clear that they don't want to follow the traditional career path, that they want to do good from the get-go. And all of these wonderful teachers at Teach for America are a great example of that.
Talk about what is being done by the individual that's in India that understands the very thing I opened the show with about the funeral pyres in India. How is that being dealt with? Because, you know, the whole global warming, there's so many different aspects, but this was such a poignant piece of information.
Yeah.
Who has come up with a solution for that?
Gosh, and I have to say that I can't actually remember his name. I've got about 120 examples in the book, and I sometimes their names escape me. That's one of the perils of midlife.
Is it Maksta Anshul Garg?
Yeah, that's the name of his company, and I forget the individual's name. But what he's done is he's used modern technology and found a way to make these funeral pyres more efficient. Now, people had come up with innovations before, but they hadn't been able to do so in a way that met with Hindu tradition. So, you know, they were enclosed, for instance, and that apparently is against the religious tradition. So what he did is he came up with this outdoor system, and it's dramatically reduced the amount of wood that's required. And the ashes from the funeral pyres are used to fertilize the forests that grow the wood for. So it's a complete loop that he's mm-hmm. created as a result of this innovation. And it's being embraced by the Hindus, which I think is really, that's the bottom line.
Well, and I think that could easily go into countries around the world that, like you said, it's a full loop. Is
right.
Returning everything to a natural environment. There's just so much that's in your book about people, individuals, who are in their own way making such a difference. And again, you don't read about them in the New York Times. Grameen Bank has been written up quite a bit. You have them mentioned in your book.
Right.
But there are so many others. It is such a joy to be able to read this. This is a manifesto. That's what you call it, for reinventing yourself and saving the world. And I think that's such a good positioning to come from, because if we go the other route, we're not going to get anything done. We're going to get so caught up with the, I call it the mucky muck of ignorance,
right,
fear, and superstition, we go nowhere. And then everybody wails and moans and groans. And here we have so many people that around the world are looking at how do we make a difference right where we are.
Yeah.
Now, Julia, do you have a website that people can go to?
Yes, thank you for asking. It's wearethenewradicals.com.
So the exact title of the book.
That's right.
Wearethenewradicals.com. What will they find on your site?
Well, right now they can find Chapter 1, which they can download for free. And there's some information about other examples, because, of course, the stories in my book are just the tip of the iceberg. So every time I hear about new radicals, I like to add their stories to the site. And ultimately, we want to turn it into a tool where new radicals can network with one another and mentor one another and find everything they need to transform their lives and help save the world.
Well, I think it is a wonderful, wonderful book. And in the front of your book, you have all kinds of foundations people can research. You have all kinds of individuals that people, you give their emails, their websites. It's marvelous. It's absolutely wonderful. And I so appreciate having you as a guest. Again, Julia Molden, she has written a book that I think is a must-read. Go to the website, wearethenewradicals.com. If you're a person that is seeking something that you can sink your teeth into, why not pick up this book and allow it to rejuvenate your mind? I mean, rejuvenate attitudes where maybe you're feeling just down in the dumps, like there's just so much, it's not working. Oh, this world is such a mess. Well, the only way you can get it cleaned up is by changing your mind, changing your action, and forming plans. And she's got good information in her book. Julia, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Donna.
It has been a delight. Do get the book. We Are the New Radicals, Julia Molden. This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be taking a break for a minute. Don't forget, check out the website. All of you listening to the show are really savvy with that. Wearethenewradicals.com. Don't go away. We're going to be back in just a little bit.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyND.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyMD.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, you can call toll-free at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. Well, I want to let you know about the guests that are going to be calling in. Oops, I forgot to tell you. If you're a new listener, I'm so delighted you're able to join us. Now, the reason you can call in is that I'll be happy to give you a free reading on the air. All you need to do is give me your first name or initial when you call in. It's very simple, nothing complicated. Let me tell you what I perceive, and then you can ask a question about anything that you like. It's totally painless, lots of fun. Now, let me tell you about the guests that are coming up next week. We have a wonderful lineup of people. We're going to be talking with Dr. Lou on Monday, how you can stay healthy, live longer, and spend wisely. This is a physician that is so concerned because of the costs of medical care, and he wants people to know that they can do more things to empower themselves to do their own homework about medical care. So we're going to be talking with him on Monday. Then on Tuesday, we'll be talking about cats. Yes, for those of you that love those furry little felines, well, we're going to get an insight with Carolyn Bartz. Then on Wednesday, we'll be talking with Mark Nepo on facing the lion and then being the lion, discovering that power that we have within ourselves. My guest, Chris Gaynor, a funeral has come up, so he's not going to be able to be with us. I don't know who will be my guest Thursday of next week, but I'll let you know as soon as I find out. And then Richard Fuller. All Rise. This is going to give us insights on how to make our life better in a business sense and also stepping up to the greatness that's within ourselves. So we've got a great lineup of people. I invite you to tell your friends. And remember, always, here at BBS Radio, we archive the shows so that you, at your convenience, can tune in, turn on, and listen to all of the programmings that you're interested in. And, of course, you can go to my website every month. I send out a newsletter. then on my website, it's posted with the names of the guests that are upcoming. And unless there's been an emergency, like it was with Chris Gaynor, where there is a funeral that came up and he's had to change his plans, things like this can happen, but the guests usually are right there. You'll see their names, the names of the books that they have written, and what we are going to be talking about. That will be, there's a short summary that's always on the BBS radio website that's for your convenience. I want to share with you a poem by Gloria Summers, and boy, does it fit the Pacific Northwest. There's a beautiful photograph of these gorgeous, gorgeous spring flowers, and here's how it reads. Drip, drop, drip, drop, rain falls from the sky, watering the earth to coax from every garden a crop of colors sublime. And boy, that's been the case here. And of course, when the sun comes out, which it has today in the Pacific Northwest, we've had such an adventure with weather ranging from heavy snow to sleet, freezing conditions, and then now we're close to the 70s. It's just incredible. But that's what happens in this part of the planet. So it's just a joy when you see all of this beauty of color around you. So I thought I'd share with you some information about roses, because that's one of the plants that I know my husband just loves. And roses, believe it or not, really don't have to have a whole bunch of care. But working with them, working with plants in general, is one of the greatest stress busters you can ever have. One, it puts you in touch with the earth when you're out working in the garden. But two, it helps to ground you and make you realize that it doesn't take a whole lot to get you back into sync with where you want to be. So if you like working with roses, you will enjoy the blooms for the longest time. They are just amazing, amazing plants. And all you have to do is understand, you just have to do the little bit with roses that's necessary. One, you want to make sure that they get an abundance of water, especially during the summer months, depending on where you are located. I know here we have to be very attentive to that. And you don't need to drown them. You just need to make sure that they get consistent water supply. And you want to pay attention to their nutrition, the fertilizers or whatever you're going to use, because that really helps them to repel bugs. Now, some experts have said for gorgeous no-fuss blooms, it's going to be these following items. The hybrid musk rose. Apparently, this particular rose is just especially fragrant throughout the summer and into fall. And it doesn't need a lot of pruning. And you can find out about them at heirloomroses.com. Also, there is a climbing rose called the 4th of July. And this rose produces clusters of roses, very low maintenance. And you can find out about them through waysidegardens.com, waysidegardens.com. And if you don't have a lot of space, if you live in an apartment, or you really don't have a garden or a yard at all, but you love roses, well, you can have a petite bush in a pretty pot. And we had one for years that stayed outside, and if you have a patio, you know, if you live in a condo, a high-rise building, you can have a lovely garden-type environment out on a balcony that is just delightful, and it doesn't take a lot of attention. Geraniums are wonderful. Roses are fabulous, though, in pots, and you can watch them just bloom, and these petite rose bushes that they have are absolutely awesome. So anyway, those are just a few tips that I wanted to share with you, because if you're like me, the gardening bug is beginning to bite a little bit, not a whole bunch, because of the weather we've had here. But there's something about the green and the flowers blooming and warmer weather, it's just like you want to get on those gardening gloves and your grubbies and get out and dig in the dirt and do some of the things. And it's very refreshing. It really is. It just makes such a difference. If you're like me and you're in the office a lot and you're on that computer all the time, getting outdoors in nature just turns things around. Wonderful. Wonderful, in wonderful, wonderful ways. Also, let me give you another website, Carroll Gardens, C-A-R-R-O-L-L Gardens. They have a rose with magenta petals, and some are actually streaked with blue. It's amazing to me what people are able to do. Okay, telephone lines again are open if you'd like to get a free reading on the air. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Or you can call, and by the way, that's the number for Canadians, 530-876-3222. That's all you need to do is give me a buzz, and I'll be able to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Really sweet and easy. We were talking about people making a difference, and I've got a couple of things to share with you, which I think you'll find interesting. But we're coming into travel season, and I don't know about you, but I've already made trips for trip arrangements for various parts of the country, and some of you are going to be going out of the country, and there is a factor of protocol. So I came across some of these tips, and if you're going to find yourself on the road, whether it is going to be within the continental United States or Canada, or perhaps you're going to be flying to Europe, Australia, maybe even Africa, there are some things that you need to be aware of. Sadly, in 1958, there was a movie put out called The Ugly American, and it really was not a very positive movie. If you've never seen it, well, I don't know that I could recommend it. It is so well done that you just go, ugh, who'd ever act like they did there? But it's something that brought the attention to the American people at the time that that movie came out, that we have to realize that there are various customs and people have different ways of looking at things. And this is something that we really needed to become more aware of. Well, The Ugly American, because of the movie, has taken on a very, very negative connotation in the last 50 years. Now, the perception, well, it may not be an honest one, but believe me, I've seen a few of these individuals in my travels, and it was not a pleasure to be around them. But most people are not this way. So some of the things that we need to remember when we are traveling abroad, and it also, well, it's not a bad idea to be aware of it even in the U.S. and Canada. You have to think about these things. Dress. You don't want, if you're traveling overseas, you don't want to dress inappropriately, because in some cultural environments, certain dress is totally, totally unacceptable. And it can make a difference in the service that you get. It can make a difference in the way that people respond to you. So you need to remember, you may not be appropriately dressed if you, as a woman, are wearing real, real short skirts and sleeveless blouses. You do need to find out what the protocols are so that you can dress in a manner that's respectful of local cultures and customs. Also, when it comes to language, don't try to communicate with non-English speakers by speaking English louder. It's a habit that I think is very easy to develop. If someone does not understand what we're saying, we think speaking louder makes a difference. I see that just even with English-speaking people. Do learn a few words of the local lingo. People really appreciate that. It makes such a difference. And when it comes to manners, don't behave like the man in a Berlin cafe who insisted on paying the waitress in U.S. dollars. Learn about the local customs and laws before you leave the U.S. or wherever you're going. And the State Department has a website that you can go to. It's travel.state.gov, travel.state.gov. It gives a lot of good information on protocol and what you should and should not do. And there was a point brought up by a gentleman who said when he was traveling, he was in St. Petersburg, and he said, and at that time when he was there, it was Leningrad, and he said, we were on tour, and there was a man that was a part of our tour that just would rant and rave about the evils of communism, and he said it was totally inappropriate. He was trying to change other people's attitudes and beliefs, and this gentleman that sent this information, he said, it's best when we respect other people's beliefs and treat everyone with dignity. In other words, treat people as you would like to be treated. And then traveling can be quite an extraordinary experience. When I think of being in the United States, we have such a wonderful potpourri. Actually, maybe it'd be better to describe it like a bouillabaisse of personalities and cultures and attitudes of thought. I mean, it is absolutely a very flavorful environment and on so many different levels. And we can enjoy it or we can resent it. But when we're traveling in somebody else's country, we need to remember that it's worth having good manners. So check things out before you go. And again, even in certain parts of the U.S., if you understand what the protocol is and you become educated about it, then you're not going to feel out of sorts and out of place. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. Phone lines are open, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. I wanted to share a story with you because earlier we had been talking with Julia about people that are, in her mind's view and in her description, the new radicals, people that are making a difference. Well, this is a gentleman who came from a rather sort of plain, nondescript background in life, and he decided that he wanted to make a difference, and he said, wonder how I'm going to do it. Now, where did this take place? It's Tangelo Park in Florida. However, it was at one time considered a neighborhood, an area, where you weren't going to get anywhere. It just wasn't going to happen. Why? Because it was home to a lot of poverty. And, of course, with poverty, there comes a lot of despair and hopelessness. Unemployment, sky high. Crime, sky high. High school dropout rate, 25%. The kid's attitude was, what's the point? College, what's that? It's not going to happen for them. They were stuck in this belief system about where they were being, well, what they were going to be for the rest of their life. And things were getting progressively worse. Now, there was a man, Harris Rosen, who had an office nearby to this area. And he had been in the area for 20 years. And he was very much alert to what was happening. Being a businessman, he was involved with his Chamber of Commerce and community activities. Now, he had become quite successful through hotels, and he said, I grew up in Hell's Kitchen in New York City, and he said it was the same kind of place when I was growing up. It'd be so easy just to give up. However, his parents had a value of education and really emphasized it and said, you get an education, you don't have to stay in Hell's Kitchen. So here he is in his office, successful. His parents were right. He followed their advice. He got an education, went into the hotel business, and he's very successful. But he wanted to find a way where he could make a difference. This is what he came up with. He went to a school meeting, stood up at that meeting and said, I promise to send every Tangelo Park student to college for free. He also said he would provide free preschool for every child in the town, too, to give them a head start in life. Free, that four-letter word that makes everybody's ears flap. Makes yours flap, I bet, when you hear it. Well, it sounded too good to be true. But Rosen then proceeded to show, not just talk, but to show, that he really meant what he said. He set up and staffed 10 preschools and sent 2 high school graduates to college that very year. So he didn't talk, he walked the walk. Well, this was exciting. The kids no longer could say, nah, what's the point? Because their mothers and their fathers were saying to them, you can be anything you set your mind to. Now the students knew that there was a way to get out. And there is one student, her name was Regina. She ended up getting her BA in college and went on to grad school to become a social worker. There was another student who was the first one in her family to go to college. She's now the director of operations for a payroll and staffing company. What evolved out of this? This one man's actions. Nearly 100% of the Tangelo kids were graduating from high school. The crime rate in the area dropped by 70%. That is phenomenal. The crime rate dropped by 70%. To date, this project that Harrison started has sent 350 kids to college. 350. They write him and they tell him, we won't let you down, and they haven't. Some of them have become doctors, others lawyers. There's been scientists that have come out of this, and other people going into other areas of industry and profession. He said this gives him a real sense of satisfaction. It makes a difference. So, and again, you hear me saying this all the time on the show. One person can make a difference. Now, how do you think the ripple effect is going to be in motion with this, what he's done? These students that graduated from college, that have gone on to be very successful individuals in their own right, they're going to affect their children. They're going to affect their community. They're going to set the standards. They are going to pass it on. And that's important, and that's what it's all about. It's the passing on of what we know. Setting the standard, putting it into motion, and knowing that it can be carried forward. Harris Rosen is quite a man, and he's one of many. And I'm delighted to have received the information on his story. And I'm just so delighted that he has been in a position to help students that way. You don't have to be a multimillionaire to do something. You can be one person reading books to children at a library. You can be one person maybe working in a food kitchen, or you can be one person that is working at a job, giving it your best, being an example of standard, and passing that along to your fellow employees. There are so many different ways that we can make a difference in life, and you're never too old or too young to start doing it right now. This is Donna Siebel. I know we're almost out of time here. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is a great world to live in, but we do have to choose how we want the world to be. And each of us in our own way make a difference. You're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. Talk with you on Monday. Have a fabulous, fabulous weekend. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.